Welcome to Hope Talks, where we share inspiring stories of hope in Jesus Christ. Hope Talks is hosted by Pastor Margaret Michael and Grayson Willis. Join us for uplifting stories of triumph, faith, and the enduring power of Christ's love. Also, if you're in the listening area, tune in to 1470 AM or 102.1 FM WBTX to listen to Hope Talks every Sunday at noon.
Welcome to today's broadcast of Hope Talks. I'm Grayson Willis.
And I'm Pastor Margaret Michael.
Thanks for tuning in. And Pastor Margaret, would you like to introduce our two guests today?
Well, absolutely. It is so good to have two ladies at the table today that mean a lot to me. And today they are here representing Stonehaven.
My name is Sydney Hazlett, and I'm the executive director at Stonehaven.
And I'm Michelle Roberts, and I'm the case manager for Stonehaven.
Thank you all so much for being here. How are you doing today?
Wonderful.
I'm doing great.
Beautiful day outside.
That does make a difference. Come out of winter and have warm is wonderful. Well, I just want to get started today. We've had both of you all on here before, not together. Right. So this is new to have you together. Yeah. But we want to talk about Stonehaven, what Stonehaven is. But I think it's always interesting for those listening to hear a little bit about your story and even why you have passion for a nonprofit like Stonehaven. So I'm just going to open it up if either one of you would like to start and just share a little bit about why do you have a passion for Stonehaven?
Sure. Well, I'll start just by saying Stonehaven is a nonprofit here that works with survivors of sexual exploitation and trafficking. Our goal is really to walk alongside women and help them in their journey of healing, whatever that looks like for them at the time. And so I'll go back a little bit to how I sort of felt a call to this specific mission and sort of how it's evolved from there. So it really started when I was a teenager. There were various conferences or things that I went to where I sort of heard this term of trafficking, but not a lot of people were really talking about it at that point. This was probably in the early 2000s, early 2000s. But for some reason, this specific topic really intrigued me and I felt really drawn to it. And I have no other, reason except I feel like the Lord was calling me to this specific population of people. Even though at the time, as a teenager, I didn't know what that meant or what that looked like. So I just sort of kept leaning in and asking the Lord, like, what does this mean? I really don't know. And, fast forward a few years, I was in college and still was looking for opportunities, trying to learn more about this topic. And I discovered an internship. I was in Massachusetts in Boston and discovered an internship at a residential program for survivors of sex trafficking. And I thought, well, this seems like a great opportunity to learn more. And I don't have anything else planned for the summer, so let's do it. And that is where the Lord solidified my call and also challenged me in so many ways. I learned so much about this work and what it means and how hard it is. I think going into it, I thought, these women are going to be so excited and so ready for healing. And so, it's going to be such a beautiful time. And it was, but it was not that at all. It was very challenging. Women are coming out of severe trauma and crisis and addiction, and it's a painful thing to heal. And so it was very, very hard. But the Lord taught me so much about who He is and what He has for these women in this population, and just taught me about provision and just so many things. And so, again, that solidified, this is what I really want to do, and maybe this could be a career for me. I had never really considered that. I think also early on, I thought I'm going to have to go to some third world country to, I wanted to go to Thailand. I wanted to go. That's what I thought it was going to be. And then I discovered, oh my gosh, this is happening in America in ways that I didn't realize. And so again, that just solidified that something needs to happen here. And I guess I got to do something about it. And so after that, I was, I think, a junior in college when I did that, and I thought, all right, I've got to find an opportunity to find a job in this field. And at that time, again, there were not many because we weren't talking about it a lot in, this was 2015 now, and there were not many opportunities because these kinds of programs, there weren't a lot of them. And so I moved back here to Harrisonburg where I grew up and did work that I could, had opportunities for, but still was sort of looking to do something in this field. And so eventually I, through a lot of different God moments, found a program in Tennessee called Rest Stop Ministries and got a job there working in the residential home. And I was there for about three and a half years, just getting experience and, again, learning what the work looks like. It was early on in this movement, and so learning what best practices were for a residential home and what it looks like to build a program was so helpful to me. And I knew I want to take this work and I want to do it in Harrisonburg. There is nothing here for women in Harrisonburg or even in surrounding areas for women coming out of these situations. And so I knew this is what I want to do. And so in late 2019, we decided it's time to start working on this and making the move towards Harrisonburg. And so we launched Stonehaven in 2020, moved back here to Harrisonburg with my husband and just started doing it. I didn't know what I was supposed to do to start a nonprofit, but I figured it out. And so we started again in 2020, and I was also working another job and having kids. And so it was very much a thing that was on the side. I was doing this on the side and figuring it out. And then in 2023 was able to start doing this more full time. Mm-hmm. And in 2024, I reached out to Michelle and I'll let her sort of give her side of up to that point and, you know, how we started doing what we're doing now.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
My journey to Stonehaven, I believe, started long before my journey in school or in this field. It started with an active addiction coming out of my teenage years and into trauma and dealing with exploitation in my early 20s and really having to work through those things and find healing and finding my passion and what I wanted to do next. And so in 2018 in school, I was able to get placed at a recovery home working with women who were dealing with substance abuse. And I was able to be the case manager there for the next 6 years, in which we opened a residential house for women who were going through substance abuse. And it offered me the chance to really see what I could do. I've told it a few times that the day that I was interviewed for that position, I was asked why I wanted to do that. And I said, I wasn't sure. I didn't know if this was the path I wanted. I didn't know if I could offer people, you know, the hope and the goals and tell them to do more because I had just done it. Mm-hmm. What did I have to offer? And that was the beginning of learning that if I had walked through it, I could offer a light on how to get through it and be able to give some advice and suggestions of what has worked and being able to really explore that in my life and being able to offer that hope and guidance. And over the next several years, really finding healing in my own life, Sydney came to me during that time and asked me to be on the board for Stonehaven. And that was the first time I knew I wanted to do it. This was a great opportunity. I loved what she was trying to do. And at that point in my life, I hadn't really dived into some of my own trauma that had happened in my life. And the opportunity to start being part of this organization gave me the chance to see that I still needed healing to work on. Mm-hmm. I still needed part of my story explored and heard and listened to. And for the next few years, I would really start working on that. And my time at the recovery house came to an end. And as I was pregnant and there was some other life changes going on, and I was offered the opportunity to work with Stonehaven. I had no idea what I was going to do when I left my other job, and I knew God would open the right door, and this was it. And it is, once again, I stepped into this position feeling like, what can I offer someone who has been through so much unimaginable trauma? And in the last year and a half with working with Stonehaven, I've learned more about my own story and how I've survived and thrived coming from that. And that there is not just the substance abuse piece of my story to offer, or the mental health, or just getting through life, but that I can also offer a piece of my story that people identify with that have been through exploitation. Mm-hmm. And be, once again, a guiding light in a different capacity. And so it's been really a beautiful journey for myself, let alone the people that I get to experience life with as my, you know, the clients I work with. And so it's been a great journey here to Stonehaven. And it's been, I'm excited as we continue this process and what will come of it.
Thank you all just for sharing your stories. And I've got to kind of have a sideline position in both of your lives, as those listening might not know that Sydney is my daughter, our eldest.
Sideline position.
Sideline position. And I got to watch Michelle as she journeyed through really hard things and made the next right choice, right? And just God's grace in your life is amazing. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you for
vulnerably with us. Yeah. And I think about those listening who may have a loved one that they don't understand why they don't just stop it, why they don't just stop the addiction, stop whatever behavior. And it is a journey. It doesn't happen all at once. But your story is a story of hope. And so I'm grateful that you share that today.
Michelle, as you were talking, one of the things that encouraged me was it sounds like through you joining Stonehaven, not only have you been able to help women find healing, but you've found healing also for yourself by helping others. And that just touched me. A lot of times when we go in to try to serve or help people, we often get as much out of it as the people that we're serving or helping. So that would just really encourage me and really touch me.
I appreciate it. And I also, I believe more than anything, I found power in my story. It was a part of my story that was always the sideline and kind of quiet. And now it is a guiding light and it can be spoke about, and it is not something that isn't, you know, it has power behind it. And so that has been an important piece, not just the healing, but finding the voice behind it.
Right.
And you doing that empowers others to be able to do the same thing. It's so important.
They see that there's hope for them. And that's why the enemy wants to keep us quiet, because he knows the power of story.
And they can relate to you because they know you've had similar struggles as maybe what they've had, and you being vulnerable to them, empowers them, like Pastor Margaret and Sydney said.
So tell us a little bit about what is Stonehaven doing right now? Like, what does it look like? Because people go, well, you all want to have a residential program. You don't at this point. We're getting close. But what does it look like now?
Yeah, the goal has always been the residential. But when I was finally like, I'm tired of just fundraising and not being able to do anything, that's really when I reached out to Michelle to start the drop-in services. And I'll let her share, if you're fine with that, what she's doing, because she's really the one that's in the thick of it and leans on me for support occasionally.
Definitely. So right now we're doing drop-in services throughout the week. On Mondays, I'm here at the Church of the Nazarene before Celebrate Recovery. I'm over at First Presbytery on Tuesdays for the soup kitchen that is there, and Wednesdays at the Navigation Center. And really what I'm doing with clients is walking a life journey, meeting them exactly where they're at and finding them the resources, giving them the support. Whatever part of that journey they just need that extra little bit of help, I am there to fill. And so that can look like, hey, do you need a meal? Let's figure out food banks, the soup kitchen. Maybe I can get you to the grocery store. It looks like referrals for counseling to go to Strengthen Peers or CSB. It's going to court and being there and making sure they know they're not alone in that courtroom. And it's meeting people exactly whatever is going on in their life. And sometimes it's not there to even fix it. It's just being there, because so often the women that I am working with feel very alone and isolated. And the trauma that they have gone through continues to tell them that they are alone. And this narrative has came out that they don't have supports. There isn't safe people. There isn't people that want better for you without something in return. And it's just showing up, that consistency, that you can count on somebody. There is good people. There is supports. You might not have that family bond because of addiction or mental health or abuse, but you can find that family in your community. And so some days it looks like sitting down and filling out an application. And other days it's walking into a recovery group with someone so they can actually go. And I remember that journey started with Margaret walking into a recovery group with me because I refused to go if I was alone. And so sometimes, you know, it's great to make sure you can provide as much as you can, but never take away how important it is just to your presence of a safe and caring human being can be. And that's what I try to make sure that I'm showing up in these women's lives as someone they can count on and someone that they can talk to and someone that doesn't give any judgment. And just knowing, hey, you can talk about that and it's not going to change what I'm going to do for you, how I feel about you. We're going to figure this out. And so just being kind of going through life and trying in every way possible to get these women to be the best versions of themselves. And so in whatever capacity that looks like, those drop-in services are great to meet people, but throughout the week, I'm definitely meeting people just where they're at, whether it's at their homes or grabbing coffee or it's at that referral source. It's just meeting them throughout and getting to know people and making sure that their stories are also heard for the first time.
And I'll add to that, you know, we've talked about before, just being there and listening to someone and supporting them. Sometimes women don't realize that this is part of their history. And so even helping them understand what happened to you is not your fault. There's a name for it, what happened to you. And so even like you've been talking about the whole time, empowering women to be able to see that part of their story and then giving them space to heal from it and showing them, being that guiding light for them to understanding. It's been really important for a lot of women.
It has. And I would say most of the women that I work with don't immediately identify with any exploitation or trafficking. And then as we kind of dig into the stories, that's when things start coming up. And being able to see, okay, this wasn't okay. And what can I now do? Power can I take back? How can I heal? And that it isn't a part to be ashamed about. And it's definitely identifying it, knowing what it is, finding a voice behind it, and taking that power that it has over them away.
Yeah. You know, and I think y'all haven't spoke about this yet, but I think it's a really important part that this isn't someone that came in from somewhere outside of the valley and trafficked that person. But it's so often it's someone that's a family member. It's someone that they're familiar with.
Sure.
And that's why all of a sudden the lights come on as to, oh, I didn't. Like, this is a situation that I was put into. I never asked for this. But it's sometimes done in such a way that they don't even realize what has been happening to them. I think that's kind of what you've been saying. But I think it's important for people to hear that this isn't out there somewhere. But can you talk a little bit about, like, what are percentages? What does that look like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a big misconception that trafficking happens in other countries or it happens here, but not like in my community. It happens in a big city. Or trafficking, a lot of people think it's abduction, it's kidnapping, it's moving people across state lines. And the reality is abduction accounts for that's the very lowest on the totem pole of ways people get trafficked. I think it's 2% of trafficking cases are abduction. Really, the top two are it's a family member or it's an intimate partner or spouse. And it happens by, you know, this is what my family has always done. This is what my mom did. It's what her mom did. And or it's a means of getting by and survival. Like, we need this in order to survive. This is how we make our money. A lot of times there is addiction involved. A lot of times there's mental health involved. But it's much closer. It's much more subtle than we think. And it's hard for people to understand how that could happen when they've never been in that kind of experience before. They've never had the same vulnerabilities as other people. And that's really what the conversation is about. Wherever there is vulnerability, you know, we've mentioned addiction, family instability, housing instability. Those things are vulnerabilities. And whenever that's present, there's someone that's ready to come and exploit those vulnerabilities. So do you have anything to add to that?
I would say definitely people are looking at, oh, people are getting kidnapped, and that's what it is. And I have worked with individuals where that is their story. But most often when I, you know, even before Stonehaven and working in recovery, it was often, well, I started dating this guy, and then this started happening. Or it was the family member. And that I started really noticing years ago. But I hadn't, you know, because I hadn't started with Stonehaven, really seen that connection of how prevalent it was in our community. And as I work with women directly with this organization, I'm seeing how often that it is somebody they trusted.
Yeah.
And, you know, other people trusted. And so it's really, we have to be aware of what's going on in people's lives, being able to see the signs, being able to pick up on things and not turning a blind eye. Because so often I've heard, you know, nobody noticed. No one said anything. Mm-hmm. No one did anything.
Right. They knew. In the living room, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And you know, there was people that knew and still didn't say anything because it wasn't their business, right?
Yeah.
And that is often a part of a lot of people's stories. People just didn't speak up for them.
Right. And a lot of times that you can't necessarily see it with your eyes. There's nobody that's really physically, I mean, sometimes physically chained up or bound. You see pictures of that a lot in depicting trafficking. But really, it's a psychological manipulation. Yeah. It's coercion. It's threats. Stuff you can't really see if you're out and about.
Right.
They look free.
Yeah. I think there's this perception. We live in this beautiful Shenandoah Valley of Virginia, such a beautiful area. And there's a darkness surrounding this type of activity that is so here, so real. But it's sometimes we just, it's easier to see the beauty, right? Mm-hmm.
It's definitely easier.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely easier to see the beauty of where you are. And it could be on a, sometimes there's just weird things happening in town, right? And if it's weird, and if there's something that seems off, like we need to pay attention to that, right?
Yeah.
Like it happens right before our eyes. And just this week we are in our life group, we were talking about Jesus having compassion and when he had compassion and he did something. And sometimes we have compassion, but we don't get involved. And when are we going to change the word? You know, when we see something, and in the lesson, it talked about this skier is going down the mountain and he sees this person has collided with whatever and skis are everywhere, poles are everywhere. And he's like, well, too bad they had an accident. And, you know, he was going on his merry way down the mountain and realized it was his own son. Wow. And he immediately stopped. And he said, if it hadn't been my son, I would have just passed on and went, well, you know, someone will come along to help them.
I think of the story of the Good Samaritan when you were talking about that. The two people that should have helped the beat up Jewish man on the side of the road just passed by like it was not any of their concern. But the person who would have been the least likely of the three you would think to help was the one that stopped and helped and had compassion.
And so if, say, I'm driving down the road or if I'm on a parking lot and I see there's something happening with this man and woman or whatever that might be, what do I do? Like, what if I see something that I feel concerned about? I can't really go up to them more than likely and go, hey, you know, and get in the middle of that. But what do you do? Like, give us some tools of how do we respond if we know something that we've not been doing anything with, if we see something we don't know what to do with.
Well, the first thing I would recommend to everyone do is there's a training called the OnWatch training. It's a free online training all about trafficking. It's done by survivors. It's very, very informative and it's very helpful in providing tools like that. You can go to iamonwatch.org and that's a great place to go. But I would say, we said earlier, trafficking is not necessarily something you're going to just see.
Right.
You know, unless you're involved in illicit activities, then you might see it and might be able to report a tip. But just you and I in our everyday life are not necessarily going to see trafficking unless you are engaged with people who have vulnerabilities. That's when you're going to be able to see it and do something about it. And I think that's, like you're saying, we don't like to necessarily get involved with people that don't look like us, don't sound like us. But when we are following the call of Christ to reach out to the least of these, like, that's our responsibility. And so becoming engaged with the single mom who's having a hard time making ends meet, or getting involved with someone who maybe has housing instability, or, you know, any number of vulnerabilities, we need to be reaching out and doing something, engaging, caring for and supporting people in our community. And that's how you're going to see it. To your other point about maybe seeing a situation as you're driving by, get the police involved. If you feel something in your gut that you feel like something's off there, it never hurts to call and report something. You're not going to get in trouble for reporting something that's nothing, but you may give that person an exit ramp, you know, like, this is my opportunity to get out.
Yeah.
So I would say in situations like that, always report it. There's a national trafficking hotline if you really feel like there is something going on. The Virginia State Police has a tip line. It's #77. You can always call them and report a trafficking tip. But I say, yeah, you're not going to get in trouble for reporting something. If you feel like something's off, you should always do something about it.
Yeah, just giving practical ways for people. And maybe it's someone that has been involved and they're all of a sudden going, wait a minute, they're listening and they're like, this is something that I know something about. Like, just, it's great to know that you are here, that they can call. They're not going to get in trouble if they're involved or if they know someone involved.
Mm-hmm. Would you add anything to that?
Definitely just also being able to call Stonehaven.
Yeah.
And I know that just happened Monday. An individual called me to say, I'm not sure what to do with this situation. This is kind of what's happening. Is this something that, like, you could come and just speak to her and just see kind of what's going on? Because I don't know what to do, and I don't know, you know, how to explore this. And would you be able to? And so it's definitely, hey, if you don't know how to go about this, call on somebody who is here to do that.
That's right.
And that's why we are in the community, to be able to come in and be able to speak to these women and really identify where they're at and explore that in a safe way that's trauma-informed. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, it's, you know, important. You can't just be anyone to really dig into someone's story, especially that's very traumatic, mm-hmm. and which you have, you know, no training in that or have gone through any of that, and you don't want to ever re-traumatize somebody.
That's right.
And so reaching out to people who want to do this, want to be part of this, who have training in it, who can really assist with resources, mm-hmm. you know, reach out to individuals in your community like us that could meet people where they're at.
And what is the best way for people to call or contact Stonehaven if they were in need or would want to talk, just to see maybe they're in need or maybe they know of somebody that would be in need?
Oh, we have a work number for Stonehaven.
540-200-8676. You can call us there. We have a contact form on our website as well, stonehavenva.org. So lots of ways you can get in touch with us.
Before we get to the end of our time together, I feel like we could talk for an hour, but could you tell us a little bit about what is the vision for residential?
Mm-hmm. So that has always been the vision for Stonehaven, is to open a safe space for healing for women in the Shenandoah Valley. And we are working towards that. We have a special use permit hearing with the county very soon because we do have a property in the works. And so we're sort of waiting to see how that goes. We've had to do a few things to get ready for that. But really the vision is to offer space for women to come, and we want to provide everything that they need for up to 2 years. So that would include, first and foremost, a safe place to lay their head and get a good night of sleep. It involves food, community, therapy, medical care, dental care, all the things that they've been lacking for so long, to come and rest and recover and try to find that healing that they really need and just offer a safe space. That's the vision of it. And so we're really excited to get that going, and we can't wait to be able to open the doors to women that really need it here.
I will ask another question, just a clarifying question. So in case someone's listening that they would want to bring someone to one of the places, whether it's here at the church, downtown at First Pres, and you talked about the Navigation Center. So maybe give a little clarity on, again, like when you're there, and then a little bit more on Navigation Center, because people probably don't know what that is.
Absolutely. Yeah. On Mondays, it would be 4:30 to 6:30 here at the Church of the Nazarene, and Celebrate Recovery does have dinner at 6, so you are able to stay for that, which is a huge perk. On Tuesdays, it would be 4:30 to about 6:30 at First Pres, and then their soup kitchen starts at 5:30, so once again, another meal, which is always a big plus. And then on Wednesday, the Navigation Center is part of Open Doors, which is their drop-in facility throughout the day that's separate but together with the shelter. And so I'm there from 2 to 5 p.m. And they offer showers, being able to wash and dry your clothes. And so that is also another perk of being able to come there, do that stuff, and also meet with me and get resources. And you are, you know, able to come in, and you don't have to have an appointment. It can be helpful if I have anything else going on, but you are welcome to always just walk in. You just tell the people at the front desk, hey, I just need to see Michelle with Stonehaven, and they'll bring you to me. And I will always make time to see you. That will happen. And if you can't make it here, I will meet you in the community. That is not an issue.
Yeah. And we have all that info on our website as well as a way to contact Michelle if you want to make an appointment with her outside those hours.
All right. Thank you all very much for that. And then I know that you all have partnerships within the community. Some people go, well, what about New Creation? So yes, you all partner
with
New Creation. And from what I heard you say, Michelle, like you all are a part of a greater network of people that work with folks. Like you find other resources and connect them to the community, which is really beautiful that you are engaging these women with your experience. You engage and help these women on the part of the journey that they're on, where you all have experience and expertise, but then you also connect them to this community and other resources. And I just think that's a beautiful partnership that maybe we don't see the bigger tapestry of what is really happening in the valley for people that struggle. So you are just another added piece that was so needed. So thank you all for what you're doing.
Yeah. We never want to overlap services or do what somebody else is doing. We just want to help connect people to those things and fill a gap where there is one.
Yes. Right. I think that's so important.
Sydney and Michelle, thank you for joining us today on Hope Talks. It's been great to have both of you. Thank you for listening to today's broadcast of Hope Talks. We pray that as we've talked to Sydney Haislett and Michelle Roberts today about Stonehaven, that it truly has been a half hour of hope for your life. May God bless.
Hope Talks is sponsored by Church of the Nazarene in Harrisonburg in partnership with Sunshine Ministries. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcast. Your feedback helps us spread hope to even more listeners. Stay tuned for more uplifting stories in the next episode. Until then, keep the faith, share the love, and find joy in the hope that Jesus Christ brings.